Welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power, and we also shine a light forward on the path ahead of us to where evolution is taking place. Now, the purpose of the entire Wiki Politiki radio podcast is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, meaning to really solve problems rather than defend positions. This week, our guest on Wiki Politiki is Veronica Monet, who joins us for the second time. You may have heard the broadcast last December, where she spoke about the Me Too movement and her own website and platform, The Shame Free Zone. She had a lot of very, very helpful perspective. We got great feedback on that interview. And now this week, Veronica brings her perspective to another surprise political movement, the Parkland students and their response to the shootings that seem to have sparked an upwising among high school students across the country, something surprising that's happened and perhaps created a new movement. Now, as a progressive and a gun owner, Veronica brings a global perspective to the issue. And as a proponent of healing, understanding, and transformation regarding the masculine and the feminine, she adds even more light to a heated issue. After all, with the notable exception of the young woman who shot some folks at YouTube last week and then killed herself, mass shootings seem to be a guy thing. So I know we're going to be wiser by the end of this show. Welcome, Veronica.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be here. I'm so glad to be having this conversation with you.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad. Yeah. Let's start with your own. I know you have an own your own very interesting background and history with guns on all sides of the issue. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I was born to a working class father who actually, when I was a very small child, about 2 years of age, he was not making a lot of money. His parents were transient fruit pickers, and my father was picking cotton by the time he was 8 years of age. So when I was first born, he was kind of in between trades, and we were very poor, and we lived in a tent out in the woods, probably on federal land somewhere. And my father had a little 22 rifle and a Honda 90 that he used to take out into the woods and poach deer. And our family lived off of that venison. That was a really, really important way for us to survive. So I grew up feeling grateful to my father for his abilities as a hunter. And then things took a kind of a dark turn. By the time I was 8 years old, it seemed like my father was obsessed with firearms, and he had one little 22 Derringer that he carried in his pocket all the time, and then he would keep double action in the glove box and a semi-automatic underneath the front seat of the car. And one time he was sleeping with a revolver under his pillow and shot a hole in the wall of the apartment that we lived in. And it spiraled out of control with him. But When I was 8 years old, I learned to fire a lot of different firearms, and I never had toy guns. I was told that guns are for killing, and we only pick up a gun if we plan to kill something. So the guns were not locked down in my home. I had no inclination to pick them up and play with them. This was very taboo in my home, but I did know how to defend myself with them. And I thought that that was a really valuable skill set. I was glad to be able to have access to that. As I got older and saw how my father's obsession with guns is really fueling his violent temperament, it became very scary. There was one particular time in my teen years where I saw him holding a loaded gun on my uncle and my aunt, who he had had a disagreement with. And his response to that disagreement was to hold a loaded gun to them. Now, they were packing up their stuff and leaving, so he was probably, I'm going to say, about 40, 50 feet away from them. But he had the gun cocked so that he could have discharged it with just the pull of the trigger. And he kept it that way for a good hour while they packed up the truck and left. And my uncle's parting words were to my dad, "Well, Jim, you're a bigger coward than I thought you were." And I remember that moment, it really just went through my heart with a chill, because up until that point, I'd really kind of bought into my dad's whole John Wayne persona, that somehow or another his guns made him powerful and brave. And I saw here was my uncle standing up to him without a weapon. And I should add that my uncle was a prison guard, so he wasn't afraid of much. So anyway, I just went, wow, that's a whole another level of courage that I hadn't had a window into until that moment. And I was probably about 17 when that happened. So I left my parents' home, and I had a pretty negative view of guns by then because of the way my father had increasingly turned to them to be dominant and violent. And I was afraid of him. I was afraid of him, and I was afraid of his guns. And I really didn't want to have anything to do with guns. Yeah, Steve?
You know, that's interesting. Just because how easily something that's so functional and so helpful. I lived out in the country, and I was always very grateful for my deer hunter friends who would so we have plenty of venison, and again, it's wild food. In any suburban neighborhood, the deers are just kind of like big squirrels, you know, and they don't have any natural predators. And so there's a kind of balance to that, and it is food. And then as things changed, as he perhaps became more disillusioned with life, more marginal, all of a sudden that healthy relationship that you experienced, at least at the beginning, that here's something that brings in food, here's something that is useful in our lives living out in the country, all of a sudden becomes something that is to be feared. And as your uncle pointed out, a sign of cowardice that somebody is hiding behind the gun. And then you said that you also lived out in the woods yourself.
Well, so I've stayed away from guns for a long time, and then I went through a marriage, didn't own a gun at that point either. That was a 15-year marriage. But when I got divorced, and that was in 2004, so this is actually kind of recent history. Mm-hmm. I was 44 at the time, and I moved to a cabin in the woods, and it was in the Tahoe National Forest in Sierra County. And the police would respond to a call, but it would take them an hour to get there. And so the little town that I lived in had 144 people maximum. I think they hadn't done a census in a while. There were probably fewer people than that. And we had a little volunteer fire department, but that was it. Other than that, when it came to emergency services, we were kind of on our own. And we had to depend on each other. Almost everybody up in that little mountain town owns a gun. It would be kind of insane not to. And so I acquired both a shotgun, a Remington shotgun, and a 9mm Beretta that I used for home defense, but not just home defense, because if I wanted to go out into the woods, I didn't know what kind of a person or animal I might run into. I was really, it was just me and my two German Shepherds. So I was really, really glad to have those firearms for personal protection. And it would be, to me, a daunting thing to try to live out in that remote of a location without some kind of protection. I remember one instance, word kind of spread quickly that I was living alone, and I was a lone female, and it created some issues. One time there was a man who parked himself in my driveway just so he could look into my bedroom window. And I didn't know who he was. I didn't know what he planned to do. Fortunately for me, he probably only parked there and stared at me for about a half an hour, and then he left. But that half an hour could have been raped or murdered or robbed or something. I don't know why he was there and why he was staring into my bedroom window. But I do know that the police could not have responded in time because it took a full hour for them to get to that location. And I felt so much better knowing that if that man got out of his car and moved towards my cabin, he was going to be very sorry that he did. So I have a lot of empathy for people who want to be able to defend themselves.
Well, you know, I lived out in the Trudy and I lived out in the wilderness in Texas on a lake surrounded by 350,000 acres owned in land trust in Texas. You know, in all the years we were there, the 8 years we were there, I have to confess, we never had a gun. But I remember one time a woman accidentally bicycled up our long, 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 long driveway, and she got to the top and discovered a house there. And she immediately rung the bell to ask us not to shoot her because she understood that she was trespassing and that in Texas, you do have the right to shoot trespassers, and that's totally understood. And of course, that's the history of, you know, being out there in the wilderness and so on. But of course, most of these shootings take place not out in the wilderness. In fact, most of the advocates for gun control and limiting these weapons are in the cities, where you know. When I was a kid, we had gangs and so on in New York, but very few guns. I didn't know anybody with a gun, a little zip gun, maybe something like that. And now, for the past 20 or 30 years, everybody, you know, it's part of the urban culture. And so there, just the wrong kind of, you know, somebody running afoul of somebody else, and every now and then there's a case of road rage or something like that. And you know, if you get into a fist fight with somebody, you know, that could be broken up. But you know, as you said earlier, the purpose of that weapon is to kill somebody or something, and you know, that's when tragedy can happen and lives can change, you know, lives can be destroyed. So it's a little different living out in the wilderness and recognizing you may encounter a mountain lion who's hungry at some point, or even a wolf.
Well, a bear, I still I now live in an area where it's the police could probably get out to my house in, I'm guessing, 15 minutes, because I'm 15 minutes from downtown. And yeah. Even though I'm out in a remote area still, our home is facing like 300 acres of Bureau of Land Management property. We're overlooking a gorgeous river. But it's, and there's cougar and bear all around. But I don't, I still own my firearms. I still have that shotgun, and I still have the Beretta. And I'm glad to have it, but I don't take it out with me when I take a walk. There's plenty of neighbors around. There's also plenty of cougar and bear. And I pretty well decided that I'm not going to shoot either one of those animals unless they were really literally on me. And that would be a lot better for me to carry bear spray. So I do. I carry this huge canister of bear spray. It's been designed to combat grizzly bears, which we don't have in California, or at least not in the part of California that I live in. But I carry that instead as a form of defense. And then I just keep the guns in my home, knowing that if I were home and I wasn't able to get, let's say, the phone, somehow or another I wasn't able to reach out by telephone, I've got the guns as a backup. And I keep them upstairs. I mean, they're not like a real present part of my life, but it's nice to know that they're there. And I think it's possible that there could even be a little bit of a gender difference around this. I'm not sure because I live in a woman's body, not a man's body. But I think for a woman who spends much time traveling alone or living alone, it can feel like a weapon is very much a right. So you know, that kind of takes us to the Second Amendment. There's ways in which I understand people's interpretation of that, not just that it's a well-armed militia, but that every citizen should have the right to defend themselves.
Yes, and I think that's obviously true. And when we get into the second part, the second segment of our show, we can talk a little bit more about how and why this issue has emerged now, and what's the context above and beyond that issue? Because again, what we find so often in this so-called civilization is that rather than try to solve problems, people will gather around their position. So we'll be back with Veronica Monet and talk a little bit about the Parkland shootings and what has come from that.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
More people nowadays are choosing natural and organic foods. The problem is, these foods can be hard to find and expensive. Creations Clean Food offers organic, non-GMO foods at wholesale prices, delivered to your doorstep, and free shipping for orders over $50. Come visit us online and take a look. Save time, save money, save your health, save the planet at creationscleanfood.com or find us on the Wiki Politiki sponsor page.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, Steve Behrman, I'm back with our guest, Veronica Monet, on Wiki Politiki. We're talking about the gun issue. Let's look at this recent movement that has emerged from the Parkland shootings. You know, there have been so many of these over the last 15 or 20 years. Why do you think a movement emerged now and not earlier? And what do you think the significance of this movement is?
You know, one of the things that I didn't say about my personal journey with guns is that for a brief period of time, I was a member of the NRA. A neighbor of mine gifted me a membership, and I had no idea what they were about. I thought, okay, well, they're about protecting our right to bear arms. I'm for that. And I started getting the NRA's publications every month, and I was stunned and horrified because I very quickly saw that there was some kind of a religious zealotry to their movement. At least that's how I interpreted it. It just seemed like a lot of conspiracy theory, a lot of distrust of I guess of the government, which is ironic because they lobby the government so much. But anyway, I canceled my membership probably after about 4 or 5 months, after I got about 4 or 5 of their mailings. I just went, oh my God. So you ask why now? I think that in a lot of ways the NRA has been outed. I think the public is starting to see that the NRA only cares about gun sales and does not care about anyone's right to protect themselves. And I think that's disturbing for the vast majority of Americans. You know, recent polls have shown that about 3/4 of Americans are in favor of stricter gun laws. And I realize that some people are against that and feel that that's a slippery slope and that sooner or later they'll just take your guns away. But mostly I see that as the kind of vitriol that's being promulgated by the NRA. I don't think that that's actually the truth. I think it would be probably impossible to take everybody's guns away. But to stop allowing military-grade weapons to be sold to citizens, I think makes a lot of sense.
You know, there was after this most recent shooting, and I know you were very much in touch with this, there was an interview with the physicians who did the surgery or tried to do the surgery on people who had been shot by assault weapons, having been used to, well, somebody got shot with a handgun and, you know, we took the bullet out and so on. The destruction that these assault weapons, they can't be used for anything but killing people. I mean, unless you want hamburger, instant hamburger, you're not really going to want to shoot an animal with that, you know.
No hunter in their right mind would want to use an assault weapon to take out a deer, not if they planned on taking it to the taxidermist or they planned on storing that venison in their freezer. It would be counterproductive. The fact is, and I do want to just clarify for the listeners, I think it's been frustrating for some people to hear progressives talk about gun control with very little intelligence around what guns are or what kind of, you know, what the different types of guns are. I don't profess to be an expert in this at all, but there is a distinction between like assault rifles and assault weapons. Mm-hmm. You can look it up on Wikipedia, basically the AR-15 too, we're now starting to use that term to designate a lot of different assault weapons, but which are not assault rifles. They're not to be conflated, but they kind of look like rifles to me. But the assault rifle has a different definition. An AR-15 could describe anything from a Smith & Wesson M&P-15 or a Springfield Armory Saint. So there's a lot of different types of weapons that could actually be denoting. But for the purposes of our conversation, let's just say AR-15 type weapon. And the fact is that bullet leaves the muzzle at 3 times the speed of a handgun bullet. So if you took an AR-15 type weapon and fire one bullet from that and took my 9mm, which is actually a larger caliber bullet and fired one bullet from it, they would enter a body in a completely different way. The AR-15 type weapons bullet actually is so high velocity that it damages flesh inches away from the path. And sometimes that's because of bullet fragments, but often it's because of something called cavitation. Cavitation, that's spelled C-A-V-I-T-A-T-I-O-N, cavitation. And what that is it has a ripple effect. And so if it goes into a liver, instead of it just having a clean pass through that liver, it pulverizes the liver and turns it into a blob of jelly. There's no way that a surgeon can repair it. And likewise, if it goes through the bone, instead of breaking the bone, it pulverizes it. So the damage that this particular type of weapon inflicts is astounding. And then when you add to that the fact that it has very little recoil, now recoil is when a gun bucks up towards you when it fires. So like my 9mm, I have learned to kind of flow with that recoil so that I don't lose my aim. But with an AR-15 type weapon, you don't have a lot of recoil to work with. You can just keep pulling that trigger and maintain your aim and your accuracy. So not only are you firing more accurately and quicker, but you're also doing way more damage to the human body. So whereas somebody who would be shot, say, with my 9mm might have one surgery to save their life, somebody who was shot with an AR-15, if it was possible to save their life, would probably have three or four surgeries to try to put them back together. And that's just not something that we need to be subjected to. And, you know, it's an interesting thing, Steve, because we don't allow citizens to run around with all of the militarized weapons that we give our military. There are certain things you can't get. It's illegal to build a bomb, for instance, right? And then there are certain other weapons that you can only own if you have a particular license or you go through I think it's Federal Bureau of Alcohol. I don't know why they control it, but anyway. and some
alcohol and firearms,
it.
They're called. Yes.
There you go. That's why.
Yeah, they're called so. That. That's why they control it, because somehow they put all of that together. When people are crossing the border, you know, and they ask you, do you have any firearms alcohol and so on, that somehow they all got that it had to do with border protection and border control. Anyway.
Yeah. Thanks for helping me understand that. Now, you know, here's another thing that we really, our laws have not kept up with the technology. So I don't know where this is right now, but as recently as 2016, we were having discussions about whether or not it was legal to arm your drone. Now, a drone can fly anywhere, right? So can you put a gun on the drone and go around shooting people in your neighborhood? We really need – it's not okay to arm your airplane. If you own an airplane, you can't weaponize it. But then we invented the drone, but our laws did not keep up. So I see this as a similar thing. We have invented a gun that was intentionally mimicking guns like M15s and assault rifles that the military used. That was the intention. And we've gotten to this place now where anybody can own a weapon that is not for hunting. And frankly, somebody who loves target practicing, I think the idea that you would use an AR-15 assault weapon for target practice sounds kind of ludicrous to me.
It'd be kind of target destruction. Target destruction. Yeah, let me practice destroying this target. Why don't you answer one thing? What is the difference between the assault rifle and the assault weapon?
Well, the specifications are very specific, so I don't think your listeners really want to hear that in detail. I would invite you to go look up assault rifle on Wikipedia. The basic premise is that it has to do with the velocity and also what kind of a cartridge and magazine the rifle has. So,
okay. Okay. We'll leave it.
I have to tell you something. I think the definition is a little bit of a game of semantics, a little game of wordplay here. I'm a little suspicious that the gun lobby might have actually orchestrated that definition. But what I read, it sounded kind of silly to me. But it's like it has to do with how the specific type of cartridge, the specific type of magazine, and the velocity as it leaves the barrel of the gun.
How has it happened that these military weapons have been made available to civilians? Is it purely an economic issue? Is it that the National Rifle Association is essentially wanting to arm militias to protect itself against the government? Why?
I suppose there's going to be a lot of different arguments about why that is. I will say that one train of thought around this is that in 2004, when the AR-15 reentered the gun market, that was when the federal assault weapons ban ended, that there was a lot of interest in the military. And we had a lot of video game culture that was kind of helping people to fantasize about being in the military. And then here comes a gun that makes that fantasy that you've been playing out in the video game come to life in real life. So what ends up happening, the NRA ends up billing this particular weapon, the AR-15, as America's rifle.
It sure is.
And, apparently you can really personalize these weapons. Some people get them in colors. It's kind of turned into an American fetish. Now, obviously, the vast majority of people who own this particular weapon are not out committing mass murders. And when we start talking about gun control, it doesn't always have to turn to the idea of eliminating certain weapons. There are many other gun control legislations that can be passed. But I'm in favor of banning this weapon. I personally think that it's pretty obvious that we had a slew of massacres that took place once that federal ban was removed.
Well, there's that old, when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. And there's that idea that if somebody has the intention of doing harm, they will find, wherever they are, they will find the ways and means to do that. Now, of course, I agree with you that you cannot imagine any purpose for having these available to civilians, and other than the perversion that you were talking about, the fetishism, the gun fetish, which we can talk about a little later. But the point is that the fact that it even exists, that you can buy these, that they're being sold, that people are making money by selling these to civilians, ostensibly for, who are gun lovers and collectors and so on, that's kind of a perversion. Any thoughts on that?
Well, actually, one of the thoughts that comes up for me, first of all, I just want to say that the political climate for me as a progressive has been incredibly dismal the last year and a half. And when the Parkland students took to marching, my hope for the human species was reinfused. I just thought, oh my God, there may be hope for humanity after all. And I started following the Parkland students on Twitter, and I thought, I can't believe this. I'm following teenagers because they seem to be having something more intelligent to say than the grown-ups do. So with that said, I also want to stress that one of their premises, one of their assertions, is that kids their age should not be able to buy these particular weapons. And I agree. When I think about the fact, okay, if you're a young boy who maybe has some emotional issues, or you just haven't learned good anger management yet, and you've been playing a lot of video games with a particular weapon, that then you can go buy one that looks very much like it in real life and think that this is a solution to your problems now, I think that's really scary. So I suppose that there's, you know, quite a few people who don't go there. We know that, obviously, because the number of people who own this weapon far transcends the number of people who have used it in mass shootings. But we've had some adults use this weapon in mass shootings, too. For instance, the one in Las Vegas. And he used bump stocks, too. Mm-hmm. So what, you know, why are we... What is it about our nation that is making it okay to put weapons that are not for hunting, not for home defense, but for an aggressive assault? What is it about our nation that's putting that into the hands of our citizenry? And, you know, one of the arguments, of course, is that somehow or another, the bad guy is going to have an assault weapon, so I need an assault weapon to protect myself. And yes. If I were going up, if somebody was coming into my home with an AR-15, I would not pick up that Beretta to try to take them out. It's true. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
So I understand. I understand that I would be outgunned at that point. However, before they ever get into my house, I would want to engage my Remington shotgun, which one of the things that I love about a shotgun is it can immobilize somebody without necessarily killing them. And I think, you know, depending on the distance, of course, if the closer you are, the more lethal it becomes. But I just, if, okay, let's say the bad guys got a bomb.
Yeah.
Do I get a bomb?
Yeah, we're going to be back with Veronica Monet and have a little more conversation about what's going on here with the psyches related to weapons of mass destruction. Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki, back after this message.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network, presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the WikiPolitiki sponsors page.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hello, this is Steve Behrman. We're back with our guest, Veronica Monet. We're talking about guns. We're talking about assault weapons. And, you know, I'm reminded of this cartoon that I saw when I was a kid. I still remember it. And it's a mother, and obviously she's got two sons, and she's giving them each boxing gloves, and she's saying, now don't fight. So somehow when we're when we put something in people's hands, whether we put video games, violent video games, in the hands of kids without really recognizing that some of them are, or many of them perhaps, aren't going to have the filters to be able to recognize the difference between what happens in this game where nobody is hurt and what happens in real life when they come up against problems that are so vexing that they feel suicidal, but they want to take a bunch of other people with them. We make it so much easier for them. So I want to get in this final section here, Veronica, I want to talk more about what is it in our national psyche, if you care to comment on that, and particularly in the male psyche. Now, we did have a shooting by a woman last week, but that wasn't an assault weapon. That was a handgun, and she was just practicing a day or so before she did the shooting, went to a shooting range and practiced. But what is it about America's psyche? It seems to happen here, doesn't seem to happen in other countries, that predisposes, A, an organization like National Rifle Association to say it's perfectly okay for ordinary people to own these things, and then B, for people to go out and do these shootings and have that be a possibility, have that be a cultural phenomenon. What's going on?
Well, that's an excellent question. I'm going to back up just a little bit though, and say that in order for us as Americans to solve our violence and gun issue, which we definitely have one, we're going to have to become more curious about each other's perspective. If we polarize and we've got the group that just wants to ban all guns and have nothing but the group that wants to actually get rid of the Second Amendment, and those people who think that they should be able to own rocket launchers and tanks and hand grenades, which apparently it's actually legal to own a hand grenade under certain circumstances, which kind of astounded me. Mm-hmm. But that those camps are never going to understand each other and never going to get together if we polarize and we just kind of sit here in our own rhetoric. I think it's really important that we start becoming more empathetic and curious about each other's perspective. And I think about the person who wants to have home defense. I think about the hunter who wants to be able to hunt. I think about, I used to go skeet shooting. There is a certain amount of pleasure in target practicing. So to be able to bring those voices forward as people who are going to actually help us find solutions about the gun problem, I don't think that's such a stretch. I don't think the vast majority of hunters want everybody running around with AR-15 type weapons. At least I know that there's a lot of them that don't, and it would be interesting to find out how many of them feel that way. And likewise, I think people who are looking for home defense aren't necessarily feeling that they have a right to that weapon. I think there's a population that we perhaps don't understand, that I don't understand because I'm not familiar with their culture, but we need to become familiar with it. We need to understand what it is about wanting to have an AR-15 type weapon and personalize it, get it in a certain color, and how that maybe ties into the video games or doesn't tie into the video games. So there's a whole psychology there that I would like to understand more so that I could empathetically connect with those people and understand where they're coming from. I don't want to label them as being perverted. I really want to understand what their motivations are, because I'm sure the vast majority of them are fine people. And then as a nation, we need to be able to look for solutions to our issues. And the fact is, we can't all have everything that we want in order to live in a civilized, peaceful society. There might be certain things that I want to have that I really can't have because it's not in the best interest of the community. And that's true of all of us. That's why we make compromises. That's why we end up driving at a certain speed. I love driving at 100 miles an hour, but it's not legal, and so I don't do it. And the fact is, more people die when we drive at 100 miles an hour, and that's a fact. We don't have facts when it comes to gun violence because the NRA successfully lobbied to eliminate the ability of us to do research on the facts about guns. So that would be a really great place for us to start, too, to have a law that allows us to keep records and compile statistics and actually have an intelligent discussion about gun violence so that we can form laws that are based on the science. And I would love for us to do that, to actually start talking about this in a scientific, logical way.
Well, you know, some of the subtext of this, I mean, in a certain regard, the Republican Party has become kind of a cult. And it's kind of similar to what the John Birchers were about 50 or 60 years ago, essentially that we have that our government is dangerous. And of course it is. I mean, we certainly, if you look at the King assassination, the Kennedy assassinations, and you go a little deeper, you see that our government was involved in those. There's a lot of evidence that that's the case. And so over time, as people have not had these conversations that you're talking about, over time, the groups have polarized into different camps. Now, in 2009, I attended this event called the Transpartisan Citizen Summit in Denver, Colorado. And for some reason that I can't quite explain, the people who I became closest to at this conference, who I had a connection with, were the gun people from the armed militia people from Idaho, or Montana, who thought that our government was that they had to ultimately defend themselves against our government, and I think that because of the lack of something that you brought out very early on in the program, and that is that the lack of conversations between these groups enables people to project onto the other, enables people to misrepresent and mistrust what are real concerns. And I understand why people, you know, when we were in rural Iowa a year and a half ago, we stayed with some people, and they said, you know, there's all kinds of people around here, and they were friends of these people, who are totally armed, and they thought that if anything happened to Donald Trump, these people would be up in arms, literally up in arms, and they were prepared. They've been preparing for a civil war. They believe that there's going to be a riots in the cities. I mean, all kinds of projections, some of it based on past experience. And so these people want to have those weapons for when that war occurs. And I think that that is an issue that's probably the elephant and the donkey in the living room that transcends both political parties. Have you experienced any of that? Have you talked to people who believe that out there in the Sierras?
Oh, that was my dad. Oh, my God. fabulous, very definitely. It was anti-government. My parents belonged to a very conservative Christian cult, and they stockpiled food, and my father stockpiled weapons. And he was definitely of the mind that he would go to battle against the government or anybody else. So I grew up that way. I think, you know, here's what I think is really encouraging, though. There's a poll that just came out in February 28th of this year, and it shows that there's been an uptick in across party lines. There's been an increase in support for tighter gun laws. Okay. So the question was very simple. It just says, do you think gun laws should be more strict? Didn't say how. And basically, there was a big change from October of 2017. That's very few months to February of 2018. The Democrats, actually, not surprisingly, went from 84% to 92%. But Republicans went from 55% to 59%. So there's actually a majority of Republicans who want us to have stricter gun laws. And then I think we need to focus on that, because we can start to buy into paranoia about each other and start to distrust each other because of our political affiliations. And I think we probably have more in common than we think we do. And I'd like for us to look for building alliances with people across party lines, especially on this topic, because I don't want to see our country go in a direction where we have banned all weapons and made it illegal for citizens to defend themselves. And at the same time, we obviously have a huge issue in this nation, and it needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed immediately. I am so aligned with the students of Parkland and also all the other students across this nation of, you know, we've had a lot of awareness here that it isn't just the students at Parkland, that there are black students have been organizing against gun violence for years. And they're all starting to be heard now, which is really heartening for me. But, you know, it's time. It's really, really time. And you know, to answer a question that you had earlier, why now? Maybe there is a way in which the young people of the United States are so fed up with watching the adults pander to various different lobbies and special interest groups, and they are not aligned with any particular monetary gain at this point, so they can speak with more clarity. And that's not an unusual phenomena. You know, we saw that in the 60s too. It was often the college students who were leading the charge to a more compassionate and peaceful world. And that's this country needs this now more than ever.
It has certainly revitalized. It was a surprise when it happened. And I think, you know, at some point there's the proverbial straw. And I think so many things have been, the veils have been lifted on so many things. I mean, the Me Too movement, we've almost forgotten that given this newest Parkland movement. But what's happened is that all of these things are peeling away layers of how people have been callous to one another and how the system has enabled that, and how, as you said earlier, somebody's making money on the sale of these guns and they don't want to stop. And so we're having to make certain choices individually and as communities. And I really appreciate your perspective, Veronica, as someone who respects the use of guns as protection, self-defense. You've had that experience. You understand them. You know them in a certain regard. You love them as you would love anything that is useful. And at the same time, the importance of making that stand and drawing that line around certain kinds of weapons that really have no business in the public sphere. We're close to the end here. Any final thoughts and ideas?
Well, yes, you mentioned Me Too, and I certainly haven't forgotten about Me Too, but I realize that gun safety has definitely taken a forefront right now. I think that our culture, and the American culture in particular, has got to shift to something that is more oriented towards community, towards cooperation, and towards compassion. And, you know, there is no end to the level of paranoia and fear that one can have. And having grown up in a home where my father was super paranoid and just became increasingly paranoid and violent, and he died with 5 safes. Each one of those safes contained ammunition and handguns, and then he had a safe for his rifles. That's how my father died, in a little trailer where he was just paranoid. We can't live like that. We can't thrive like that. On some level, we've got to learn to cooperate and trust each other. And yes, I do believe that we, each of us, have a right to defend ourselves, but I think it has to happen in the context of a certain amount of faith in each other and some trust in each other.
Thank you. Thank you, Veronica Monet, for summing it up and putting it exactly that way. This is Steve Behrman. We're on Wiki Politiki. We've been talking about guns, assault weapons, and I hope we got some perspective. Once again, Veronica Monet, thank you for your thoughts. Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki, and we'll see you next week.